Welcome to Green Talk Radio. This is Farron Dancer here on KTRC. And we do this little Green Talk Radio thing every Saturday, 4 p.m. here in Santa Fe. And as a result, people are getting informed out there in radio land about what's green and sustainable, not only here in our city and our county and our state, but we poke fun at the world from time to time as well. And each week, Green Talk Radio is brought to you by Unicopia, a public benefit nonprofit corporation dedicated to sustainability within our culture. And Unicopia is also dedicated to the educational outreach for not only all things sustainable, but green building models in particular. And I have here in the studio with me today my esteemed guests and clients and friends, Brad Holian and Kathy Holian, who is also does double duty as one of our county commissioners here in Santa Fe County. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Farron. Good afternoon.
One of the things that brought Brad and Kathy and I together, and it's about almost 4 years now, is something called the Glorieta Freedom Ranch. It wasn't called that 4 years ago, but that's evolved as we've evolved a vision around their land on the Glorieta Mesa and building a net zero off-grid, very green and sustainable home that is entitled the Glorieta Freedom Ranch. Tell us about the vision of the land and what some of the history might be and how this thing evolved for the two of you.
Okay, well, the it all started in about 2003 when Kathy had this brilliant idea that we should buy some land and try to save it from development. And we were looking around at various pieces of land all over northern New Mexico, hopefully within about a couple hours from Santa Fe. And we had a very nice experience with Diane Eshman going up and looking at this piece of land, about 1,200 and some 75 acres or so up on Glorieta Mesa. We, of course, weren't going to be able to afford to buy the whole thing, so we looked at a couple of lots up there, and we thought this would be great. The land is beautiful, and there's a drainage. There's actually some, an intermittent stream called Padre Springs Creek that we could get a, you know, kind of going diagonally across a couple of lots up there. And so we bought about 500 acres, and we thought, wow, we'll be able to have recreation. We can go up there and hike and do horseback riding, and we can just enjoy it, you know, just sort of protect it and enjoy it. And that's fine, but after a while, you start to notice that the land over the history had been rather abused by grazing from maybe even 100 years ago or so. And we realized that the forest was getting very thick, overcrowded with small trees, and we'd start to have to do something with the land. You can't just sort of sit there. You've got to maintain it. In fact, you think you own the land, but pretty soon the land owns you.
How did I know he was going to say that? So, you know, it's not, okay, wow, we found all this acreage out in the wilderness, and it's gorgeous, and now we're home free and happy ever after. Now there's a responsibility and some stewardship issues that go with that, right?
Yes, it's always a challenge. One of the things I think that was kind of interesting is that when we first looked at the property in that way, we thought that the major problem was overcrowding of the trees and that it was a fire danger and so on. So then we hooked up with Kavira Coalition, and in fact it was Craig Conley from Kavira Coalition who came out to look at the land, and he said, oh, overcrowding isn't your major problem at this point, it's erosion. And it was erosion from the roads that were built through that land in order to be able to access it, and it was eroding in a hurry, and he said, you had better do something right now.
So your initial thrust in these previous years in owning the land has been to address the road issues as well as forest thinning?
Well, it's a very typical thing in the ranches of the West. you drive your buckboard up the waterway, and because that's the easiest place to go, but that isn't the best place to put a road. And it's the road begins to erode. And what happened was that the nice old stock pond that they had along the Padre Springs drainage, right near the headwaters, started silting in from all of this erosion that was going alongside the road. And so we talked to Jan Willem Janssens, who I guess you've had on your program.
Yes, Jan, this is Earthworks Institute.
Yeah, and so he suggested a plan a couple of years ago, and we've now gotten people from Earthworks to come and do some road restoration work, and we've got a forest plan. In fact, we've just got a thing here called the Forest Stewardship Plan, which will be presented to the state forestry to help get some, some help with the, not only how to do the forest thinning and the restoration of erosion problems, but also to help to pay for some of the work that will be done.
Yeah, and I think this is a really important thing to point out to your listeners, Farron, who may be in the same position mm-hmm. of having land that needs thinning, that there are programs out there that will actually help private homeowners to be able, with some of the costs, as long as they put in-kind contributions.
Is this a state-funded program, or is it federal, or do you know?
State forestry.
It's state forestry.
Yeah.
And so if you're willing to pony up in kind with what they will participate with, then you'll get their funding and you can actually make something happen like that. Do they supply you crews and technologies, or are they just supplying you funding?
No, they're just supplying funding. They expect that you'll go out and, contract with people who might be able to come in and do thinning, and they can take the forest products as payment for the work that they do. They can take out these what they call dog hair, these little thin poles that can be very useful for coyote fencing, could be useful for latillas, and there's a lot of fuel wood also that is accessible in this project. It'll be a 20-year project. So
wow.
By then, I'm going to be 20 years older.
Yeah, what a concept. I think we're all moving in that direction.
Well, I started there yesterday at age 65. So I'll be 85 in 20 years.
You'll be 85, and hopefully you'll have somebody doing the thinning other than yourself at that point.
Well, no, I hope I'm going to be doing the thinning, actually.
It might keep you young and alive.
Well, or at least alive.
I will just point out that Pete Seeger is about 94 years old, and he still chops his own wood.
How about that? I had no idea. And is he still singing and performing, too? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
In fact, he was at one of these things with Obama, and he actually was up there, and he came along to a particular, chorus of a song, and he'd forgotten the words, and so he said la da 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 and just kept strumming away and said, I don't remember the words now, but this is a great song.
Well, at least the tune was great, right? So I just want to let the listeners know we're recording this show today on Thursday, March 17th, and it's the greenest day of the year.
And it's your birthday,
and
I
it's
understand.
My birthday too. And
boy, talk about a green guy!
Happy birthday, Farron!
Thank you. Yeah, people ask me when I got into this whole green thing, and I tell them March 17th, 1949, and that's I came in doing the green thing. And I'm not a Celtic fan, though. I'm a Lakers fan, and unfortunately, there's a little conflict there. So, and my wife is a Celtic fan, so go figure. But we're coexisting pretty well around all of that. So. So all of that said, we'll get back on topic here. As far as the land and the ongoing, is there any vision around sharing with groups of people or the public in any way where they could visit the land? Is there some kind of aspect of the stewardship program that makes it accessible for education?
The Santa Fe Conservation Trust holds the easements on both of our parcels of land, and the one of the objectives is, of course, to allow people to contact the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, and they can then come up and hike or horseback ride. But also there's an educational component. Much of the work that has been done with Earthworks involves bringing up students from the University of New Mexico to do some of the assessment and actually some work. And believe me, when I see some of the younger people helping me out up there working, I realize that they're a lot stronger. But it's also good to see their interest, you know, the fact that they really are getting excited about a career, some of them, in restoring the land.
Well, and to tap some of that youthful energy and focus it in a way and have them focus it in a way that's productive and, you know, really moving the whole sustainable vision forward, not only for your land, but for the land in general. I'm in the studio with my guests, Brad Holian and Kathy Holian, proud owners of the Glorieta Freedom Ranch, and the construction of the actual physical residence on the ranch is going to be kicking off here in just a week or so. And it's been in the planning works for quite a while, has it not?
Yes, it has. Well, in the beginning, when we realized that we were going to be doing quite a lot of restoration work up there, I had this picture in my mind that we would go up on the weekends and cut down trees and branches and do the physical labor ourselves. But then it became clear to me that that just wasn't going to work. So our first idea was that we would put a yurt up there, that we could spend time there, especially in the summertime. And then we thought, well, why don't we do a cabin? That would probably be a little more comfortable.
And you skipped over the whole teepee idea altogether, right?
Yeah, no teepees.
Okay.
We already had a tent.
Okay.
So then we got to know Farron, and we got the idea, why not go one step further and do a completely green off-grid home? And so that's the exciting project that we're embarking on now.
It's still mostly a cabin, but it'll be a comfortable cabin.
It will be a comfortable cabin, and it'll be completely outfitted with solar photovoltaics for energy, with battery backup, of course, because this will be off-grid. And we will have a little bit of carbon going on, because somehow you have to figure out a way at this point, in this point in time, to back up the batteries if, in fact, you know, we get into a cloudy spell or, you know, there's extra usage. So we have a propane generator that backs up the batteries, and the batteries back up the PV system. So this is a really interesting off-grid model in terms of the energy and how it'll be utilized. One of the other issues on the land and for this house project is water. And Brad, you want to describe what led us to, well, being sort of on the leading edge with 100% roof water catchment for your water supply?
Well, we've got some water collection on our house in Sunlit Hills, but it's not at all the amount that we would need to actually do everything, including showers and the whole business. The problem up on Glorieta Mesa is that you have to drill down, you know, 800 or 900 feet to get groundwater and subsurface water. And that's a very expensive thing, and it's also very expensive as far as how much electricity it takes to pump up from that depth. The water is not very high quality either. And as you know, in the Canyoncito area, there's a lot of uranium, and there's problems in areas with coliform from too many houses. So the groundwater didn't seem like a sustainable plan. But if we captured water off the roof and off the barn and everything, we'd have enough to good quality water to get by pretty nicely, I think.
Well, it was my understanding that your neighbor down the road, Bob Sherwin, who's the developer of the Padres ranch at Padre Springs, when he drilled his wells, there was no one locally that could go deep enough. So he had to hire an oil drilling rig out of Texas to come up and drill his water well, which I do believe was 1,800 feet all the way down through the mesa to where they got to some substantial.
I believe a little more, too.
I believe it was actually 3,000 feet down.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I don't think it was. It wasn't quite that deep. It was over 2,000 feet, and that's why the first driller went bankrupt.
You had to bring in them. You had to bring in the guys from Texas who are used to drilling rigs, yeah. Forever.
Right.
That's what they do down there. You know, they like to drill.
And then the water quality is so bad that he's going to have to put in some kind of a water treatment system.
So for the whole development up there, there's going to be a central water treatment facility? Or?
I'm not sure about the development at the top, but he has a development at the foot of the mesa, and he definitely is putting in a water treatment system for that.
And just so you people don't think, ooh, developer, what a bummer, this particular developer is pretty darn conscious about green. I worked with him about 3 years ago in revisiting the covenants for Padre Springs, and it's about the greenest set of covenants of anything out there. And there is a baseline for getting to Bill Green, New Mexico gold for houses built at Padre Springs. So, you know, there's such a thing as development, and there's also such a thing as doing it right. And that's the vision that Bob Sherwin has for Padre Springs. And, of course, Brad and Kathy, who own that large piece of acreage above Padre Springs, or somewhere you guys are kind of sharing boundaries on a couple of boundaries. Well, of course, these people have the vision for going green and sustainable that may even take it one step further. So as far as the house itself, you know, there's some interesting aspects when you're catching your roof water as your water source. One of the things we've looked into is a black water system that would take the gray water from the house, the showers, the laundry water, the, you know, dish water and all that. Put it into the septic system, and then there is plans to put in what is called a sludge hammer, which would treat the water in such a way where it could be used for irrigation, and that way the precious roof water wouldn't be, you know, dispersed in that regard. So there's some fun things, and of course the county, and it's interesting, I went through a little dance with the county, and they don't have a box to put people in if they want to do a composting toilet, or if they want to do gray water and not have you know, the traditional approach to things. So we're going to be stretching the envelope a little bit here on this project. Well, in a number of ways. Your guys' passion for green building is, you know, setting us up for another interesting model. And this one is off grid. And Brad, I think we're going to be going to break here momentarily, but I want to introduce this topic of off-grid and why it's so relevant. Even though we're going this route, it may not have been 100% necessary, but in terms of your vision and yours and Kathy's vision for the land and being self-sustainable, why off-grid is making a lot of sense. So when we come back from break, We'll address that in detail. So we'll be right back here on KTRC. Wake up and live now.
Wake up and live now. Life is one big road with lots of signs.
So welcome back to Green Talk Radio. This is Farron Dancer here on Green Talk Radio KTRC 1260, and I'm here in the studio with Kathy Holian and her husband Brad Holian, and we're talking about the Glorieta Freedom Ranch. And before we get back into that conversation, I just want to remind the viewers to pick up a copy of the Green Fire Times, which is available on newsstands throughout northern New Mexico. And it is now currently the sixth largest circulation of any publication in New Mexico. And it's all about green. And if you want to be up to speed on things that are sustainable and what's going on in our community here in northern New Mexico in particular, pick up a copy. And I also have sort of a monthly presence there in the magazine. It's a column called Green Talk. And you can read about some of the issues that have been going on here currently politically and socially, and just you know, the backdrop of our new governor and some of the issues that are at hand here in the sustainability movement in northern New Mexico. So welcome back, Brad and Kathy. I want to get into further discussion of the Glorieta Freedom Ranch. And I know your neighbor brought utilities up the road a number of years ago for quite a large price tag to do that. And it became your decision to avoid getting involved in tapping the grid and the utilities and some politics with the neighbors and whatever else, and really go with this concept of going off grid. And so what led you to that, and, you know, what do you feel philosophically why that makes the most sense?
Well, I believe that this house is educational in nature as well as a place that we will have as a second home. So part of me wanted to do this just to see whether it could be done and what it would take to do this and what it would take to do it in a way that's affordable.
We also have, you know, solar panels and all that sort of thing on our house in Sunlit Hills. And we are grid tied, and we get rec credits from that, from PNM. And occasionally we get a check from them for having generated some kilowatt hours by solar.
Mm-hmm.
What we thought, though, that we would do here is be free from all of that, hence the name the Freedom Ranch. And Glorieta Freedom Ranch was a synergistic name that Kathy and Farron and I came up with one day. And that's part of the whole deal, is to be free of the large corporations as much as possible.
Well, and we take time almost on a weekly basis to do a little expose on our friends PNM. I call them friends because I'm trying to keep the peace. But, you know, it's a little bit disconcerting that this for-profit corporation that's basically taking all the profits from New Mexico and dispersing them out of state is, you know, the one entity that's calling the shots around our energy usage and needs here in New Mexico. And I think more and more people may be looking in alignment with the Holians here in terms of this little aspect of freedom. Now, you don't have PNM as the energy source on the Glorieta Mesa. I believe it's the San Miguel Energy Co-op. But there's still issues, rising rates, dirty source of energy. And I think the San Miguel Co-op is gets their energy from coal-burning sources for the most part. Is that true? Do you know?
I believe that they get their energy from Tri-State, as most co-ops do. And I believe the source of that is coal-fired power plants.
Right.
And go
ahead.
One thing that I would like to point out is that the contract that we have with PNM at our home in Santa Fe is very generous, but we were one of the first to sign up for that contract. And now, as time goes on, they just start tightening things up so that people, it's less and less economically feasible for people to put solar onto their house now.
Yeah, and I think what Kathy's referencing is the renewable energy credits from PNM. They started out, are you guys receiving 13 cents a kilowatt hour?
We receive 13 cents, and we have an avoided cost of whatever, we have net metering, so that means that whatever we're producing for ourselves, that we're getting a credit, in essence, also of 9 cents. So you could say that for every kilowatt hour that we produce, we're actually getting 22 cents.
22 cents a kilowatt hour. And I know they bumped that 13-cent REC credit back to 11 cents, and now they're looking to bump it down again, and then they were looking to phase it out altogether, is my understanding. And unfortunately, with our current political situation and the corporate-friendly governor that we have in place, it seems like PNM and other corporate entities, oil and gas, uranium interests, and so on, are demanding more because they think they can get more with this current political climate. And fortunately, some of our legislators down at the Roundhouse have done a pretty darn good job of holding those entities back in this current session. It's been a very defensive posture. But the end result is that we're looking in the years ahead now at them taking back these types of incentives that have made going solar and renewable more doable for a lot of people. So in the future, I think there may be more and more people going off grid. What a concept, that whole freedom idea. Alan Sandilar from Positive Energy, who is their off-grid person, said that their business is only about 3-4% off-grid at this point. But I think we'll see a growing market in that realm as more and more people want to become independent. And in the case of, you know, getting your energy from PNM or for an energy co-op, when it is a dirty source of power, for those of us who want to make a difference in terms of our carbon footprint, this is an awesome way to go.
Plus, it's kind of a great feeling if the grid goes down, we would still operate up at the Glorieta Freedom Ranch. Our lights would still go on.
Your lights would be on because they're it's your own power. What a great idea. I love it. And Brad, at your house in Sunlit Hills, even though you're grid tied, didn't you have sort of a notion for how you could take that another level and be prepared if the grid went down?
Yeah, in fact, that's the at our house we have batteries as backup. So if the grid goes down there, we can switch over to the batteries for as long as power is off. And it hasn't happened very often, but you never can tell when things go black. And as long as the sun still shines, we are glad to receive whatever photons we get from up there.
That's right. And when we did have a blackout not too long ago, I think a month or so ago, and we had candles going all around our house in the evening, my 14-year-old son said, "Wow, Dad, this is really provincial." And I thought, provincial, wow, what a cool word. But the concept, it was so far out of his realm of experience to just be hanging out with candles. And we thought it was rather romantic.
Pioneering.
So,
well, and I'll point out, my brother lives in Japan, and actually he lives in one of the suburbs of Tokyo. Now, he wasn't directly affected by the quake other than feeling it, but they are going through long blackouts every day to be able to conserve power because I think at least 25% of their capability for their electric grid was knocked out with those nuclear power plants. So in that case, it would be really great to have solar energy. And I know that he went out to the backpacking store and he bought a little solar powered light.
Just so he didn't have to go provincial and use a candle?
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the house itself. And, you know, when you're creating your own energy, then you become even more conscious and more attuned to the fact that the less you use, the better off you are. So it's not, you know, when we move more and more into renewables, it's not just, oh, well, let's just crank up our usual dose of energy. The conservation piece becomes more and more relevant, especially when, you just don't have, you know, an abundance of energy. You have to be aware of where your batteries are, what the sun is doing, and you don't want to kick in that propane generator if you don't need to. So you become more and more attuned to conservation.
Yes, and I would like to say that I've been nagging Brad for years to turn off the lights when he leaves a room. Now I think he's going to be motivated.
Well, we're going to have LED lights. So
so if you leave them on, there'll be 6% of the typical incandescent usage.
The thing that was very attractive about building this cabin up there was that Farron wanted to build essentially a passive house, one that has a very tight building envelope so that we don't have to worry about freezing to death. I mean, okay, being in the dark is bad. That's pioneering, right? But right. Freezing is also bad. And his plan is to collect some solar rays in a wall that will absorb heat and radiate it back into the house, clear story windows, and also I should mention solar heated hot water for those showers that do distinguish us from our pioneer ancestors.
If you're going to go renewable, you want to get the conservation piece and really start to track your energy usage and be aware of how you can save not only electrical costs, but heating costs, and just keep things to a minimum so that it's all sustainable. And in the case of the Glorieta Freedom Ranch, we did a lot of passive related stuff. We have a lot of thermal mass with this compressed earth block wall that runs the entire length of the house that faces due south. We'll get the solar gain from the clear story windows. And the building envelope itself is going to be super tight. And, you know, in keeping with passive house design and construction, so you minimize the heat load as well as the electricity load. And we have kind of a fun approach to heating the home. Brad, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, the idea will be to have a very efficient wood-burning stove that is, I think you were saying that it's like 95% efficient or something. And Kathy, of course, thought, wow, well, there's an extra little feature you can have on there, and that's a pizza oven.
Yeah.
Which we have plenty of wood up there that needs to be culled from this overgrown forest of pinon and juniper that we live in up there on the, or will be living in up on the mesa. So why not burn some of that already gathered solar energy rather than having other sources of heat?
Well, when you have to keep 500 acres of woods thinned, it's kind of a no-brainer as to what to do with some of that wood that you're thinning. And the stove that we are going to spec for the house is dual catalytic converter, super low emissions, and super high efficiency. So even though you're going to have, you know, copious amounts of wood, you're not going to be using very much, and a little will go a long way in heating what is 1,150 square feet of heated space for the house. So, you know, there's the piece. Conservation, when you move off-grid, you want to really create a situation where your energy and heating requirements are minimalized, and this project is a great model for how this can be done. And also just the size of the house. We wanted to keep it a modest size, 1,150 square feet. And for two people, that can go a long way. It could become your primary residence at some point. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I've actually always wanted to live in a small house. Well, maybe it's not as small as what people are calling small houses these days, but it really is appealing to think about simplifying our life, to live in something that is small, which means it's easier to take care of, and that we downsize. We don't have so much stuff anymore to worry about storing and taking care of.
Well, and I think I end up falling into the classic American category of having a two-car garage and keeping my vehicles outside and then using the garage to store stuff that is virtually worthless. So
of times you don't even know what stuff you have. You're kind of surprised when you clean out the garage.
Yeah, that might be a scary concept for me right about now, but I'm going to get to it this spring. It's on my list.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Well, it's been on my list for a while.
Lainey, are you listening?
So, hey, Kathy, before we depart, and because we are in our last segment here, I just wanted to ask you, as county commissioner, you certainly have a handle on what's going on in the county. And can you tell us about the county program called Renew Santa Fe and how that's going to work with commercial solar installations?
Okay, I think I've talked about Renew Santa Fe on your show before, and originally we were going to start it off for residences. But it turns out that due to a glitch in Washington, D.C., they're called PACE programs, Property Assessed Clean Energy, are on hold right now. So we're the first in the country, are going forward with a commercial side of this program, and we want to do a pilot project. We'll probably do one large project, five medium size, and maybe 20 or so small ones. But the idea is that commercial entities can come to the county. Well, we will actually do outreach to the installers to see who might be available for this pilot project. And the idea is to work with the commercial business and the banks who will actually be doing the loans, and to work out a size of project that makes sense for the size of the building. The other thing is that the county will be putting up some money for what is called a loan loss reserve fund. Now, this is money that, in essence, insures the loans if there's a default. So what that does is it lowers the interest rate for the commercial entities who want to put these projects onto their buildings.
And does this program work the way the residential PACE program was designed, whereby the cost of the system is put on the back end with property taxes?
That's correct. The commercial, they will be billed in the same way that they are now for property taxes, and the value of the property will be underpinning the loan. So that also brings the interest rate down as well.
And not to throw out any conspiracy theories, although we'd like to do that from time to time, it was my understanding that on a national basis, the residential PACE program kind of went into mothballs after 22 states were ready to roll it out. And the theory was that oil, gas, and coal were going after some of those federal agencies and putting some pressure on them, but one can only, suspect.
I have my own personal conspiracy theory, and mine is that it was actually the banks that were really unhappy about this, because with these PACE programs, which, as you say, were taking off across the country, it was a powerful way to connect people in communities with sources of money through the local governments, and the banks were being cut out.
And the banks certainly like their piece of the pie, don't they? So, wow. So, is there any possibility that that residential PACE program could get some legs again and come back around?
Well, yes, there is a possibility. There's legislation in D.C. right now. I think there's legislation that's sponsored by Barbara Boxer. And the idea is for the federal government to create rules for these PACE programs, and then they could go forward. But my understanding is now, with the new change in, I would say, the politics, that this is on hold for now.
Well, our time is winding down. We're going to have to run out and get ourselves a green beer here on St. Patrick's Day, and that's the way we're going to end our segment. And we'll look forward to getting with you again next Saturday here on Green Talk Radio. This is Farron Dancer signing off.
One big road with lots of sun.